Welcome to episode 77 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzeski. Hello, Alan.
Hey, how's it going, Eric?
Not too bad. Let's kick things off right away here. Tiger Woods takes Dubai in a, if you'll pardon the pun, a desert storm, shooting a final round 65, 7-under par, included a 6-under on the back nine and 9 birdies total. Ernie Els was leading the tournament, this following a third round 73 from Tiger Woods, but could only manage a 71, which included a bogey on the last hole to fall into a tie for third when he needed a birdie to force a playoff. Dunked a ball in the water with a 5-wood from 236 it was to the pin, 225 to the front of the green, and he was at least 15 yards short of that. So Woods 2-for-2 in 2008.
Well, it doesn't bode well for the rest of the PGA Tour or the rest of the world if he's going to keep winning every tournament he's in.
Well, he did have a bad round there. The second round, he only managed a 71. In the third round, a 73. This after bookend, starting the bookend with a 65 again in the first round.
Yeah, that's true. He won. The Buick by 8 shots, and now he wins one coming from 4 shots back. So the man could do it any way you want it.
You get to do it in a major, of course, so that's one knock against him that will come up every time he trails in a major, essentially. Perhaps, you know, he talked at the U.S. Open about modifying his strategy when coming from behind, and Tiger's really never been one to come from well back. He's pretty much a front runner, and frankly, it's part of that reason is because he rarely has the chance to come from well back. He's either kind of off the pace and not really there, or he's winning. He's never really in third.
No.
To have a chance to do it. So the odds are, he probably comes back from, 5 shots down more than anybody else ever, but he's only been 5 shots down like twice.
Exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't bode well for Els. His 3-year plan, not going so well at this point. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Phil Mickelson, not sure if he had a 3-year plan, but didn't seem to have a one-hole plan because he loses in a playoff to J.B. Holmes, who wins the FBR Open for the second time in, what, is this 3 or 4 years?
3 years. He won it 2006 in his rookie year.
There you go, 2006. 2 years ago, so second time in 3 years that J.B. Holmes has won. Maybe he'll just win it every other year and keep re-upping his PGA Tour membership status that way.
That's a nice way to do it. Just win one tournament every 2 years and still make the tour.
Yeah, the same tournament. Why not? But Phil Mickelson started the day a few shots back. J.B. Holmes had to birdie the 18th to get into a playoff with Phil Mickelson, but then Phil kind of blew it and J.B. Holmes birdied the 18th hole again in the playoff, sinking a 13-foot birdie putt and then an 8-foot birdie putt, winning this tournament again for the second time in 3 years.
Yeah, it was a weekend of blown chances. Ernie had a 4-stroke lead over Tiger. J.B. Holmes had a 4-stroke lead at one point. And I don't know. If it's not Tiger, they can't take that third round lead and extend it farther, I guess.
That's right. J.B. Holmes sporting the belly putter.
Is that the latest fad? What Sergio's got on J.B. Holmes?
Yeah, all these young guys who shouldn't be needing a belly putter.
I wouldn't think so.
As David Faraday said, I think you need to have a belly before you can have a belly putter. That should be a rule.
And I think that's a perfect rule. Well, yeah, I don't understand.
J.B.'s got a bit of a belly there. Just a little.
Yeah, I don't understand what this the younger crop of golfers using the belly putter. Are they just not confident enough with a regular putter? Or not sure. A little bizarre.
A bit of a segue here. Not something we wanted to talk about, but what the heck. We'll go with the flow. Do you think a belly putter should be illegal?
Yes.
I do as well. I don't think you should be able to anchor something to your body. I think it should be swinging in your hand. So we'll leave it at that.
Well, we'll leave it at that.
We'll be right back after this message from Titleist, so stay tuned.
I'm working on making everything I look at
something new all the time.
Winning my first major.
Another green jacket.
Working on my signature.
Hitting it this close.
Chest to the target.
Staying positive after every shot.
More wins.
More birdies.
More eagles.
Just having more fun.
Beating the rest of these guys.
I'm working on a bunch of stuff.
Thinking less. I'm not telling.
Even the world's best want to be better. That's why there's the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back. This week's forum topic of the week was given to us by the Masters on CBS. Not sure who that is, but maybe he needs a new moniker. And he wants to know, is Ernie Els a choke artist? Your thoughts?
Ernie in Dubai, it's not going well for him. He lost a playoff to Tiger Woods a couple of years ago, I believe in 2006, I think. So Ernie in Dubai, it's a weird thing for Ernie because he hasn't done squat basically since Tiger Woods came on tour. His majors came before Tiger Woods came on tour. And since Tiger Woods came on tour, Ernie has been Mr. Nowhere Man. He had his injury, of course, so we'll give him a pass for a year or so. But he's snake bit or tiger bit or something because Tiger just seems to have his number. I don't recall Ernie winning any tournament of significance in which Tiger was in the field.
No, it's been really weird this last, well, like you said, since Tiger came on, but even within the last 5 or 6 years, I mean, what has Ernie really done? He had the knee injury. He switched equipment companies. Nothing seems to be working out for him. I don't know. Is it the same thing that we talked about last week with Phil? Is he just getting, I mean, he's 38.
It could be. I mean, Ernie's getting up there in age too, like you said. As for whether he's a choke artist on this particular hole, I think he had a bad round. I mean, he shot a 71. It included a bogey at the last hole. So he was 200 par going to the last hole. He made back-to-back birdies on the back, but kind of bumbled around on the front for a little while. You know, a putt around 71 is not going to get it done at Dubai, where people shoot low scores. There were 66s and 65s thrown up by a bunch of guys on the leaderboard that day. They moved up from, you know, 20th. Low scores were out there. It wasn't that windy. You know, that last hole, I think, you know, I've always defined a choke as a mental mistake that leads perhaps to a physical execution error. And I think that's what we saw. I think to some extent, it wasn't a massive brain cramp or anything like that. But the simple fact is, if you put the ball deep, it goes in the grandstands, it goes in the bunker, it goes in the rough. You're still in play. You can't risk coming up short. And I don't think from 236, you're going for the pin, as some people argued on the forum side. I don't think you were going for the eagle there. You got to go for the safe play, and the safe play is put it deep. Put it in the stands if you want. Take your free drop, chip it on, make the putt. Ernie Els won a U.S. Open doing that. So you got to do something. You can't dunk it 15 yards short in the water.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It's just the last couple tournaments where he's been in contention. He's just mental blunder at the end cost him the victory.
He played well to finish out the Verizon Heritage that Boo Weekly won last year, where he chipped in twice in the last two holes. Boo did. And Ernie nearly holed a shot for eagle on the last hole. Played it out over the water, you know, very nicely executed shot there. But at the same time, didn't get it done throughout the day. He was obviously leading Boo Weekly at the start of the day because he was playing behind him. So I'll give him an incomplete on the choke artist thing right now. He's I think he's mildly choked a few times lately. And the other tournaments where he hasn't choked, he hasn't been near the lead to choke. So
that's a very good point. He's usually not around the leaderboard at the in the final round. So I don't know. I mean, he's one of my favorite golfers, and you hope it's not in the twilight of his career. I mean, he is only 38, but yet for golfers, I don't know.
All right. I know that we'll be right back, so stay tuned again.
At the tournament you're watching now, more players trust Titleist.
More players trust Titleist.
Trust Titleist.
More players trust Titleist.
Than all other golf balls.
Than all other.
All other golf balls.
All other golf balls combined.
All other golf balls combined.
And welcome back. This week, something that got batted around a bit was Ian Poulter's comments, not to mention his semi-nude picture with a pink golf bag covering his more sensitive areas.
Didn't need to see that.
He claims he was misquoted, and, you know, it sounds like he was being a bit cheeky. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt there, because he's always struck me as a level-headed guy, not a Rory Sabatini or a Woody Austin type. But he basically said, I haven't been giving golf my full attention. You know, if I do and I improve and I play at the level that I know I'm capable of, it's going to be Tiger and me. He said, give Tiger the Masters, but put me down for the U.S. Open. Tiger was later retorted that in a post-round interview, interviewer mentioned that the gap between him and Phil was bigger than the gap between Phil and number 1,000 or the last guy in the world rankings. And Tiger responded, I thought Poulter was number two. Little joke, but I think a bit too much has been made of it. I'll believe the guy and say that he was perhaps being a little tongue-in-cheek. He's a little bit of a goofy guy, and I don't think he was seriously suggesting.
No, I mean, at this point, I mean,
and he's not said anything stupid like Tiger's more beatable than ever. He's not said anything like I outplayed Tiger despite shooting, you know, 71 to his 65 at the PGA Championship. you know, he's not said any of that stuff. He just says, I believe that if I play to my potential, I still won't beat Tiger, but I'll be number two. So, you know, in some ways, even if you take him at his word, that's semi-realistic, perhaps, you know?
Yeah, it's a little tough because, what is he, like the 22nd player? 22nd in the world rankings, so he's got a little ways to go, and he is 32. I don't know. It was kind of funny. You kind of sit there and you read the original comment, and you're kind of like, this guy's a dope. And then you kind of read a little bit more into it, and it's like, I don't know, he just seems like he's a goof, and he's just having fun with it.
Paul Azinger has decided to flip the Ryder Cup format around a little bit. He's going with the same order that the U.S. team won with the last time they won, which was about, I think I was just born. it's 99, so I was like four. It was a long time ago. But no, they're playing the foursomes and the four balls. They're playing them backwards from what the way they've been played since 99. The foursomes will precede the four balls on each of the first 2 days. Foursomes is, of course, alternate shot. if you want to call it that. Four ball is four balls, better ball. Do you think this will matter at all?
No. I mean, maybe he's trying to play a little, you know, psychological for the team. Hey, last time we did this, we won.
Yeah. I mean, the Americans tend to do better in foursomes, the alternate shot. The Europeans, for whatever reason, seem to do really well. They ham and egg it better than us, which plays us really well in four ball, because one guy's in the drink and the other guy's making an eagle.
Right.
So, you know, this gives us a chance, perhaps, to build the early lead in the day. And, you know, even if we give it away in the afternoon, at least it's even, then we go ahead again in the morning the next day, and then, you know, maybe it'll be tied going into the singles, which had been traditionally a U.S. strength. So,
I you know what?
I think it might matter a teeny bit. Hey, you know, it's a good thing. It shows he's at least thinking about it. And yeah. I think it'll be more about how much fun the guys have. And
I hope we don't get any of that this year.
Well, we see them having fun in the President's Cup, and we don't see them having fun at the Ryder Cup. So I think that's a lot of what it boils down to.
Yeah, hopefully, you know what? He's made different. He's already made a bunch of changes as far as selection of the picks and when he's going to make the picks. And
he's trying. I mean, it hasn't worked, so you may as well just stir the pot and see if something works.
Absolutely. Maybe they should just get all, I don't know, get a keg and play some Xbox together the night before.
Hey, why not?
Our next one is a story. This is the feel-good story of the year so far. Legally blind 92-year-old guy nails a hole-in-one down in Clearwater, Florida. Leo, and I'm going to kill his last name. It's
Fialco.
Well, you can see, you can link to it on our show notes. And 92 years old, he has macular degeneration. He's been golfing for 60 years, and he gets a hole-in-one.
Yeah, he thought he was actually playing the 13th hole, but it was pointed the wrong direction, just happened to make a hole-in-one on the...
I just hope I'm golfing at 92.
No, he wasn't. He was playing the correct hole and everything. Yeah, and Jeff Smith, if you're listening, I hear he bought everyone drinks after the round, so... You can learn, which is more than I can say for you, buddy.
Which is a rumor I've heard that you're supposed to do after getting a hole in one.
Yes, but we like to give Jeff Smith a little bit of crap on the podcast anytime a hole in one story comes up. And in fact, that might be the only reason we talk about hole in one stories, because unless you care, or unless you know Leo Fialco, you probably really don't care much. But
probably not. But that's okay.
Congratulations to Leo, and good job on buying the drink.
Absolutely.
Jeff can be reached at Jeff at no. Our last story here gets at the whole phony Phil thing. And I saw some comments on this, and I wanted to throw it out there. There's a lot of talk about why, or the fact that Phil is comes off a bit phony sometimes. And this is perhaps an example why. Phil Mickelson decided to give away a pair of Super Bowl tickets to a father and a son, but he had to do it. It just felt staged. He didn't just give the father and the son some tickets. He did it in front of like media members, and he did it not as a result of some contest or anything like that where you would expect media members to be around. But basically it was the staged way of like Phil Mickelson to show that he's a nice guy. I don't know. Does it ring phony to you, or am I looking to apply the label?
Well, I do think, I mean, I think you bring up a good point of the fact of he waited till what, like the third hole, I think it was, in front of all these people, and hey, I'm going to give this father and son Super Bowl tickets, which is a cool thing to do. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's like, why did he have to wait until then? Why couldn't he give them, when they were trying to get his autograph before the round or
a week ago?
Yeah, or yeah, exactly. I mean, he does a lot of good stuff, as far
as I gave him a lot of credit a long time ago, last year, I believe, for helping the family of the football player. I think his wife got paralyzed or something like that because she fell out of a thing. But anyway, this ex-NFL player was, one of the meanest players in the NFL, and he helped send their kid to college because they were having trouble with bills, medical bills, all that kind of stuff. And he did that quietly, and the football player's PR agent and stuff kind of leaked the story later on. So, that's fine. I'll give guys credit for being nice guys if the story happens to get out and stuff, but this just reeks of opportunistic nicety or something.
He does so much behind the scenes, and it's just kind of like, it's instances like this where it's kind of like, why are you doing it now? Why are you doing it when the cameras are off, when you've done all this other stuff, behind the scenes and kind of quietly and not drawing attention to you? I mean, if it was like a contest.
Obviously, there'd be press around. But in the middle of a round, we'll let you guys decide. We'd be interested in hearing from you, since that about does it for episode 77. Now, if you have comments on this or any other story, email us at podcast@thesandtrap.com. Our show notes are available every Wednesday at thesandtrap.com under the podcast category if you've come a couple days late. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes if you haven't already. Submit some feedback. Send us emails. For Alan Olson, this is Eric Brzezinski saying, go Penguins.
Go Giants.
Go Giants! Screw you, New England!
Yeah, that'll be good.